This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lock and Varats, Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
Brodsky beat Clear, All Outfit wins the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Pavement, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to Cracking the Codes. What a monster day across two codes today. Miracle Mile, the sort of the most dazzling and exciting harness race in Australasia, up there in at Menangle tonight, and two of the most famous races on the Australian calendar to be run at Flemington today, the Newmarket Handicap, which is 1,000 years old, and the Australian Cup and the Randwick Guineas in Sydney. So this is one of those days, as I introduce Simone and Dan, that we sort of rub our hands together and look in about three or four different places at once. G'day, guys.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Dan.
How's your week been, Simone?
It's just been busy. It's always busy. Dogs here, dogs there, just trying to fit everything in.
Got Darcy your little trotting pony for Darcy yet?
No, but it is actually a work in progress. I must admit that HRV have been wonderful, and I did contact a lady that I had to leave a message. I'm going to get back to her. There's a lady in Ballarat that has got a pony that we can go and try and just get a feel for it and learn a little bit more, because I know nothing about harnessing up ponies. So HRV have been wonderful. They've been steering me in the right direction. Darcy will have to do an education day at either Ballarat or Melton. So it's and sort of
that's pretty exciting. In itself.
She's actually a really good mum. You know, I know she and Darcy are at loggerheads most of the time, and it can get a little bit testy sometimes. But she's actually, I think she's. You know what I think she's got, Dan? I think Simone's addicted to ponies. She just doesn't have enough horses at the Lara property now. She's addicted to ponies.
No, I think what it is, I've done the football and the cricket with my son a long time ago, and now it's not. It was a bit tedious at times, playing football at Warrnambool at 8 o'clock in the middle of winter when it was 0 degrees was not.
It's worth it if your kid's a good player. Obviously, he wasn't much good.
Oh, he just he was okay.
Serviceable.
He was okay, but then when he got his apprenticeship, he didn't want to risk losing his job or not being able to work from football injury. So he sort of went by the wayside, but. I certainly do enjoy the horses. So it's a lot of work, but it's not a hard hobby to have to go along with. But Darcy turned 10 during the week too. So, up late.
Did you give her a party or were you angry with her again?
She's having a little party next week, having a sleepover, because it was all a bit hectic this long weekend with people going away. So, we've got out of the big kids' parties and down to just a few friends for a sleepover, so it certainly does get easier. So, yes, Mother of the Year this week.
Absolutely. Hey, we're all having a sleepover in a couple of weeks, Dan, aren't we? Up at Echuca, the three of us?
Yes, absolutely. That's Victoria.
Not together. We're not together.
No, let's knock that on the head straight away.
Planned a terrific
Dan and I are going to be top and tail in room 13, which is going to be testing. But
isn't Tanya going to be wedged between you then? I thought she was going too, or has this all changed?
Yes, no. I'll enjoying the weekend away with my wife as well, and you guys and the Cracking the Codes team, which is pretty much us. We'll be up there for the evening.
Is Craigie coming?
At the Rich River Club and the Chuka Cup Harness, which is a Friday night, and a Ben Stud tour on the Sunday. So, and in fact, I think there's still a few places left. If people want to get interested, they can get onto the Victoria Harness Racing Club website. And you mentioned our producer, Craig Davis. He went off and left us. He went on a kibbutz or an odyssey for about 7 or 8 weeks. He did well because he was a bit like playing Russian roulette with all the border closures. So it's good to see him back today.
He's got a light hue, a light tan hue. He looks like, when someone looks like they've been away?
Yes, and I was thinking Craig would probably be great for the golf. He could take one for the team because I am not very... I'm hopeless at golf. I don't play it, so I might get escorted off the green. Yes, I may, because I may be putting divots.
I'd like to see Simone handcuffed and dragged off the golf course and thrown in the back of a van, Dan. So we better sort of just steer the conversation gently back to the subject at hand. Well, let's talk about the Miracle Mile first, Dan, because we are going to have a little extended chat and we're going to reminisce about great new markets and Placid Arc, and there's a fantastic package on the mighty Burnborough and so on. But first of all, let's just touch on the Miracle Mile, and we are going to have a chat to Mr. Bowtied a little bit later on, and you can explain about that as well. But Is this the... To be honest with the Miracle Mile, Dan, it's like a lot of things. The build-up is often more exciting than the race itself. All the subterfuge and who gets in, who gets out, where do they draw, where's the speed. Quite often it can be a wee bit pedestrian once the gates fly back, but there's no race in harness racing that has the hoopla coming in as the Miracle Mile.
Yeah, that's true. The lead-up often was the best part about it. But the race was first run in 1967, and really it's a list of champions that have taken the race. Early days we had Robin Dundee won the first one. Of course, Hondo Grattan, Paleface Adios, Pure Steel, Popular Arm won it in 1983, Pro Chevalier, Village Kid, many of the Kiwis, including Master Mood, and of course, Holmes DG won it twice, Choken won it twice, Christopher Vance, Westburn Grant was a two-time winner, Norm's Daughter with Kelly Kersley, successful in 1996, Eric Lees, our Savance a lot, Christian Jeez. Cullen
Who would
in
be
1998.
All right, you've got me now. Top five winners of the Miracle Mile. Not top five wins in the Miracle Mile, but the top five winners.
Well, obviously, Christian Cullen's right up there, and his devastating win, that was probably the pinnacle of his racing career.
I think anyone
that would have remembered Mount Eden's win in 1971, Popular Arm and Gamelite's duel in 1983, and of course, Sokiola and Smoking Up, who won two of them. And you look at the times when the race switched from Harold Park to Menangle, and the first Miracle Mile was won by Monkey King at Menangle, 150.8. And since then, they've broken 150. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The last six runnings of the Miracle Mile, including the fastest, was My Field Marshal at 146.9. It's quite extraordinary to get to that level. I mean, that was unheard of. In North America, obviously, it was heard of. But here, if they were running times 153, it was incredible. And now they're... got horses that regularly go inside 149, and the makeup of the field tonight, it's probably not the strongest one I've seen. In fact, it might be one of the more weaker races that I've seen, but you can only have the best of what's available, and we've had Ride High and Go Amiss, although he's on the comeback, and where it is that he could be ready for an April return, which is only next month. And of course, Lochinvar Art, with the problem he had with a corn in the sole of his hoof, ruled him out of the race. But King of Swing, he's going for two Miracle Miles and trying to become the eighth horse to do so. James Rattray was associated with Bowtide, the Tasmanian, and James has actually got a drive in the race tonight. His brother's horse, Ignatius, so Tasmania is well represented again. And we'll have a trip down memory lane with James and Bowtide. And I think Tassie at the time was really being put on the map in all three codes, because we had a chat last week about the Australian Cup winner, Simone. And, of course, we had a few gallopers at the time that were making headway here. And of course, in the harness racing, Bowtide really flew the flag. And there was a bit of a common denominator from all three of those, well, all three codes, really, wasn't there, Matt? And it pretty much all stems back to a little town in Tassie.
Well, Mick Bells told me a few years ago, the trainer, the cleaner, that the reason why there's the Longford had produced so many horse and human legends is because it's where the two rivers meet and there's electricity in the river, so the hydroelectricity. So, hey, Simone, just quickly remind us who we've got coming on. And then, Dan, now that we're on a roll with Mount Eden and the Miracle Mile, we might pay that little Mount Eden package that we've got, but and then we might have a little bit of a chat about the big races coming up at Flemington today. But Simone, it's 12 months to the day / night since all hell broke loose up at Horsham.
That's exactly right. So Justin Brilliant, who is the manager at the Horsham Greyhound Racing Club, will be joining us a little bit later on. Horsham Cup is tonight, and you will remember that last year it was just a mess, the race. There was greyhounds that were ill, and so the race was, there was scratchings everywhere.
They got dog COVID.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but that's basically what it was. And then, of course, COVID. So everything was just a schmozzle. So we're back this year, and obviously things are looking different to last year and different to previous years, but at least tonight there will be a Horsham Cup, and Justin will join us to talk about that.
All right, so we'll have a chat to the best surnamed person in greyhound racing shortly on the show. But Dan and Simone, let's you mentioned Mount Eden and, as one of the great winners of the Miracle Mile, and you've plucked out one of your great little packages, and we may as well have a listen to it now, and then we'll come back and have a chat about some of the great new markets and Australian Cups. But here's a little pearl that Dan found somewhere on the internet.
He's let them go. They're racing in the Miracle Mile, blue light flashing, and Mount Eden, 70 or 80 yards back behind the others at least, and by golly, will it be a performance from here? Wow, look at these leaders go on the first corner. Stella Frost accelerating fast up on the inside is going to keep Bay Foyle off the rail. Two lengths behind them, Manaroa showing surprising speed. Deep Court is caught three deep in the back straight and mixing his gear a little bit, followed by Neutrodyne. And Mount Eden with a scintillating burst of speed has caught them up. And Miles is pulling out three wide. He's going to go for sure. I'd say they've just beaten the first light as they race to the top corner. And the leader, Bay Foyle, got to the front now. A length to Stella Frost, getting the trail behind it. Deep Court with no trail on the outside. A length away, Manaroa on the inside of Mount Eden, and Miles changed his mind, took hold of Mount Eden to give it some sort of a run, and dropping out two lengths last is Neutrodyne. In the straight, they'll get the bell at the judge, and Bay Foyle the leader. There's not a great deal of speed on at the moment. It's in front by a half length to Deep Court on the outside. Three parts of a length to Stella Frost in a pocket on the fence. A length to Mount Eden on the rails, Manaroa, and a length and a half away, last is Neutrodyne. After the bell, on the turn out of the straight and the Miracle Mile, three furlongs to go. Bay Foyle the leader from Deep Court in the centre, and look at Mount Eden go now. Mount Eden, three and four deep, is scorching up towards the leader. Stella Frost is pegged in on the rails, can't get clear, and then Neutrodyne followed by Manaroa at the two furlongs pole, and the electrifying Western Australian Mount Eden had dashed to the lead. Mount Eden booted clear, two lengths to Bay Foyle. Deep Court is third, Stella Frost can't get a run, and they were followed by Manaroa and Neutrodyne into the straight, and look at the mighty Mount Eden go. The Miracle Mile is all over for 1971. Mount Eden five in front, and going further ahead, Bay Foyle is only plugging Stella Frost, now getting clear, but Mount Eden is going to win the Miracle Mile by a big space. A champion, a freak, and a horse in a million. Mount Eden has won by five or six lengths. A great go for second, maybe Deep Court second. Third, either Stella Frost or Bay Foyle. Close up is Neutrodyne. And last of the six, Manaroa in the Miracle Mile for 1971.
I reckon we spoke different back then, didn't we? Like, that's a voice that I don't hear down the street these days, Simone. Do you hear, if you go to the corner store in Lara, do you hear someone say, "Good morning, dear. What can I help you with today?"
Not at all. Was it? Was it really John Tapp calling that? Yeah. Gee, it was certainly a different way of talking, wasn't it? It was almost like it was very theatrical.
Well, we clung onto the Queen's English longer, you know. Yeah, no, that's right. And I think the ABC always kept that tone too. Not that that was the ABC, but you listen to it. And even when you listen to like World of Sport cricket interviews with cricket players from the 1970s, They sound like that too. Maybe that's how we sound. I don't know.
It's almost now these days that we actually take the mickey out of people talking like that. But it's actually a very it's a nice way of hearing things being explained in newsreaders. It was just different, but yeah. But the thing before, I just want to say, Dan, another thing.
I love this show this week. We're wandering off the path merrily. So get going.
No, I'm not actually off the path. But the thing that gets me with these old trotting races, Dan, you would probably appreciate this the most, is the inside rail. How it looks so fixed and dangerous when you've got all these horses going around and the sulkies. And it makes me feel anxious watching those races from back in the day. It really does.
Oh, well, it was. There were some big stacks. Actually, there was one. I was looking at one of the replays. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but there was a big stack in one of those Miracle Miles, and a very famous one in the Inner Dominion in Perth, Poleface Adios was favourite in, and I think it was the first of Hondo Grattan's. There was a massive full three-quarters of the field come down, but Mount Eden, you know, you'll hear people talk about him as being one of the greatest horses ever seen, and that had to be one of the greatest performances. He'd already caused a false start, So that was the second go at it. So first foal start, it was virtually game over. Second time round, it was virtually game over. 70 or 80 behind in effectively a mile race on a tight turning track. He was in front at the 600 and powered away and won by half the straight. It was just freakish, and he was very much a freak, and that's one of the words that are often put to this unbelievable horse on a great list of champions that have won this great race. It's a million-dollar race, and so it should be.
Now, Mount Eden is a volcanic peak, also known as Moanga-Wahu, as we all know, but which I just Googled. So he is named after the New Zealand peak, obviously, Dan.
Yep. I've been there too, as you do, you know, any place that's named after a racehorse and you get past. But yes, he was. And, you know, like a volcanic peak, he was explosive, but at the same time,
see what he did
was unpredictable.
Simone? Yeah. Very good. So that was Mount Eden, who was one of the legendary winners of the Miracle Mile. And let's just change tack a little bit to Flemington today and have a look at some of the great winners up that famous Flemington Straight. And we got a first player replay of the great Western Australian who came across and blitzed for a couple of seasons quite some time ago now. And there's a funny story associated with Placid Arc as well. And then we've got a nice package on one of the absolute legends of the Australian turf, whose many wins included a monster win in the Newmarket Handicap. But let's firstly have a listen to Placid Arc. And there's a couple of little yarns associated with Placid Arc.
It's Placid Arc on the outside from Let Me Tell, and they seem to be the leaders on the inside. It's Rubiton, Caledonian Boy, and also there is Canny Lass running on with Princely Heart. Placid Arc in front on the outside, Rubiton the inside, Princely Heart. It's Placid Arc, Princely Heart, Princely Heart, and Placid Arc's won it. Placid Arc's won the big treble. Second, Princely Heart. Third, Rubiton.
And he had the worst action you've ever seen, Dan. He crabbed along, didn't he, Placid Arc? But he somehow managed to put it together. And This he was trained by Wally Mitchell in Perth, and the story I was going to tell you involved a journalist mate of mine called Danny Power, who wrote a quite innocent story on Placid Arc, but it involved illegal medication that the horse had had. And Wally Mitchell...
When you say just legal, or did you say illegal?
Legal. So it was just a run-of-the-mill, just something that was totally accepted, not an issue whatsoever. And Wally Mitchell sort of went on to say, yeah, I gave him this, this, and this. I think there was an inadvertent positive swab to it, but it was all quite innocent. It wasn't anything, you know, dodgy at all. But the problem is the story was innocently written, but the headline on the back page of the Herald was, "I gave Placid Arc drugs, Mitchell." And Danny Power was horrified that the sub-editor had so misrepresented the innocence of the story. And Danny Power spent the next 10 years avoiding getting his head ripped off by Wally Mitchell and running into him. And no matter what explanation he gave, it was never satisfactory. So I think the lesson in that one was naive newsrooms trying to portray a racing story and completely ballsing it up. So there you go. But he was... He was an amazing horse, wasn't he? And Danny Power is still hiding from Wally Mitchell all these years later.
he completed the treble that year, which often references were made. And the big treble, of course, is the Lightning Stakes, Oakley Plate and Newmarket. And he was just an amazing animal. He was built like a tank. There was a lot of hay list about him. I thought there was a lot of similarities between the two horses, as well as both being really fast and, in Placid Arc's case, loving the Flemington Straight. And it was back in a time I was just a young whippersnapper. The first day...
He was a good-looking young rooster, Simone. Let's lay it on the table. It on the table.
Placid Arc we're talking about.
The old Placid Arc era of Dan Malecki. Because I remember Les Seador said, oh, gee, the girls around the stables up at Berrigan used to love him, but poor old Dan was too naive at the time to twig. Yeah.
But then Dan, he throws a stunning daughter too, doesn't he? He's a good sire.
I didn't notice at the Night of Nights that. No, I didn't notice
that. You didn't notice,
that at all.
No. You noticed the stunning, stunning girl.
You know what they called me? You know what my nickname became when I started producing my own offspring? I'm serious. You've got to laugh.
Zabil?
Yeah, they call me Zabil. Yeah, I think I call myself Zabil, but
yes,
anyway.
I think that's the truth, yes.
Placid Arc. Very fond.
I reckon you were more of a Placid Arc, quite frankly. But anyway, Dan Malecki was a good-looking young rooster, and he still retains that sort of hint of what it was back then. So.
I've still got the dapples and the nice wither and, you know, wide girth and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly right. Hey, now, Simone, before we throw to this package on the legend himself, Burnborough, tell us what you know about Burnborough, because you've done some Googling, and it's always interesting when someone from the outside gets a bit interested in a bit of a story. So what have you discovered in your Googling about the mighty Burnborough?
Well, there was a lot of information about Burnborough, and I certainly cannot retain it all. But interestingly enough, he was always weighted very heavily, like 68.5 kilos for a jockey. I mean, the other day I heard you talking to Glenn Boss on the radio, and he was down to 51 kilos so he could ride in a feature event. And we're talking, it's nearly 20 kilos heavier that a horse had to carry back in the day. So that's quite remarkable in itself. And there was 4 years of his life that he wasn't actually able to race due to an ownership dispute. So it just, it's these wonderful stories that make the history so colourful. But you just think, how ridiculous was that at the time, that they couldn't settle this dispute and you had this horse that was obviously a champion sitting there in the stable or in the paddock doing nothing for 4 years?
And he was owned by a very spivvy-looking restaurateur by the name of Romano, from memory. And so he was part of the story. And as Simone said, Dan, he was sort of kept in isolation, Burnborough, from the rest of the racing population because of this ridiculous dispute. And he used to run around Toowoomba a lot and things like that. So we were actually denied a decent... It was like Muhammad Ali when he was banned from boxing because he wouldn't go to the Vietnam War. We missed probably three massive years of Burnborough that may have actually, if we'd seen more of him, he might have been in Farlap's position and Farlap might have been in Burnborough's position.
Well, you'll hear in this package that Farlap's name is mentioned and Burnborough as his, pretty much as his successor. Neil Kearney, who is one of the most fabulous TV journalists that I've come across, and he's a wordsmith, had put together bits and pieces of this, as well as some interview grabs from the son of the owner and trainer. And remembering that the horse didn't race in Brisbane until he was six, but he raced around, as you said, the Darling Downs, and he certainly came south carrying big weights. And there's audio from a movie tone clip which went into the cinemas that evening of Burnborough winning the Newmarket, and it's fabulous to listen to. I really think anyone that is out there, have a listen and enjoy what is a fabulous piece on one of the greatest horses on the Australian turf, the mighty Burnborough, who won the Newmarket Handicap in 1946.
So, forbidden from racing in Brisbane, Burnborough had his first 20 races at Toowoomba's Clifford Park on the Darling Downs. And from the first, Colin Bates knew he'd said goodbye to a once-in-a-lifetime racehorse.
After he first started, a two-year-old in Toowoomba, well, I think everyone knew he was going to be a champion.
By the summer of 46, he'd gone from bush nag to national hero.
A champion in action is normal motion. Note that he gallops with his hind legs spread well apart. Now watch the true poetry of this rhythmic marvel's movements, as with all 4 feet off the ground, he covers 25 feet in a stride.
Still not allowed to race in Brisbane, the post-war crowds flocked to see him in Sydney and in Melbourne, where they idolised Burnborough as much as the people of the Depression had worshipped Farlap.
With a furlong to go, Molly pulls him to the middle of the track as Rapirio dashes to the front. Now Four Freedoms challenges, takes the lead and seems set for victory. Burnborough can't possibly win, but here he comes. What a stride, what a horse, what a finish. But it's too late. No, it isn't. He might do it. Foot by foot, inch by inch, he pegs the leader's back. Can he do it? He can, and he does.
People had just come through the war years. They were looking for a hero of some description, equine or human, and he was the hero. He emerged from nothing, and of course there was always a great charisma about him, and there was always a lot of debate about the horse and intrigue. And I think this sort of satisfied the mentality of the people of that era when they were looking for diversion, and they found diversion in the champion like Burnborough.
Jim Anderson was a schoolboy when Burnborough was brought to Brisbane just to train out of Jim's dad's stables.
He was such a hero, this horse, that the public used to come every afternoon at 3 o'clock when he exercised around this exercise ring, as we called it. And they'd line 8 deep just to watch him walk. And it was an incredible sight. You almost have to have police controlling the crowd just to watch him walking of an afternoon. That was the extent of the great horse's effect on the people in those days.
He's a champion of champions, and he belongs to all Australia.
After 8 wins in a row in Sydney and Melbourne, Brisbane crowds finally saw him race for the first time. Among them, a mysterious woman in black who gambled on him in thousands of pounds, and a big punting Catholic priest, and a race caller named Keith Now.
When you talk of Burnborough, raise your cap, Neil. He had something special. He was something special.
At Brisbane, 1,200 miles from the scene of his Newmarket triumph,
in the Ahern Memorial, as always, Burnborough started slowly.
The words I used, I believe, was Burnborough is almost impossibly placed. Now have in mind, Neil, he had 10 stone 5. He's over there with, I think, nearly last in field of 27.
Cragsman, joined by Head Dewey, continues to make the pace a cracker. Burnborough is still back in the field, and once again his chance seems hopeless.
On that particular day, Burnborough would have won any race, in my opinion, in the world. In the world. And he was a world champion horse.
Burnborough is weaving his way through with a paralyzing burst of speed. He's clear on the outside and going like a whirlwind. He makes good horses look second rate in a record-breaking dash for the judge.
It was just an incredible sight to see, and a horse that was written off in the race with a half a mile to go. And to see him storm down the outside under a very big weight and win in such magnificent style, it was a great feeling to see a great champion win in that way.
A week later, stepping up from 7 furlongs to the 11 furlong Doomben Cup and carrying a monstrous 10 stone, 11 pounds, Burnborough gave another memorable performance.
His jockey shows him the whip, but he doesn't have to use it. Burnborough the champion has the will to win, and does it easily from Tea Cake and Craigie.
Neil, he was the best in my time anyway, without any doubt. He proved it with the weights he carried, the way he did it, the magnificent stride of him. I'll go on here for 2 years if you...
Burnborough was to the middle distance races what Far Lap was to the Melbourne Cup. And like the Red Terror, Burnborough's racing career ended tragically. It was Flemington, November the 2nd, 1946. Having won 26 of his 37 races, the unthinkable happened.
It's into the turn with Flight still in the lead, closely followed by the Master. For the others in the race, the day is over. But wait a minute, Burnborough flounders. This is the moment that is the turning point in the almost unbroken career of the Wonder Horse. Flight, his only serious competitor, sweeps on to victory. The crowd is puzzled. Never before in the annals of Australian turf history has such a thing happened to a champion. Burnborough is led from the course into the paddock. And in a little while, the world is to know that Burnborough, the Wonder Horse, has suffered irreparable injury.
The tragedy of it was something I suppose you could akin to the assassination of President Kennedy when Cinesound film generally eventually got to the movies. People just flocked to the movies, not to see the main event, but to see the Cinesound report on Burnborough and his breakdown. And it was a great tragedy, great sadness for Queensland and for the whole of Australia.
A month later, movie producer Louis B. Mayer paid £93,000 to take Burnborough to stud in America.
Hundreds crowd the wharf as the first racehorse of the land is ushered from his float to the plush-lined stable. That will be his home for the next few weeks while on the water.
As a stallion, his offspring won over $5 million. And Burnborough died in Kentucky in 1960.
Amazing horse, champion, certainly one of the greats. There's no doubt about that, that Boonbra is considered to be. And we were talking off air just before, guys, and it's not too often that a horse's name will be at time to time mentioned in a race call or in a reference to a horse race by having a finish like Burnborough. And Matt, you'd mentioned before, perhaps Superimpose is the only other horse similar to him that would get back in the field and finish with quite a rush. But he was some sort of a horse. And when you consider the handicap around him in the early part and the politics involved by not running in his home state until, home city of Brisbane until he was six, it might have robbed him of other Doomben Cup, Stradbrokes and every other big race that's run in Queensland.
That was haunting, the video clip, when you watch it, given you know how much I love that Ruffian doco, and it's so eerily similar to the footage of Ruffian breaking down in that match race with Foolish Pleasure at Belmont Park and then getting pulled out. And that was the, obviously you couldn't see it on the radio, but when you watch that clip, you see Burnborough getting pulled out coming to the home turn at Flemington. The camera doesn't know which way to go, to look at Flight or look at Burnborough.
It's the same spot as Dulcify, wasn't it? Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of Dulcify because it happened at the same point of the race. But obviously he lived. In the sound clip, it sounded like he was going to get put down. But he lived and become, a successful enough sire, sired $5 million in the 1950s in the US.
And he died, Simone, in 1960, and I was born in 69, and I think of horses like Burnborough as so detached from my life, but he died 9 years before I was born, which I found a little bit... is there a greyhound that has got the same, it's got a finish like so-and-so? Is there a turn of phrase that's used for big finishers or mad front runners?
Oh, there probably is. I just can't think of the greyhound.
Definitely
world. Bold Trees, yeah. And I was going to say a stayer. It would have to be a stayer that you'd be referring to, I think. But yeah, Bold Trees, Dan. Thanks for that. You gave me the answer. And
well, Simone's no longer into greyhounds. She's into pony trot. So she's moved away.
Well, talking about successful sires, just quickly, Fernando Bale. We all know Fernando Bale, the super sire. His stud fee price has just risen to $7,700, which I think is still terrific value. His progeny won $23.5 million last year, and already this year they've won, in January and February, $6 million. Jeez. So if that's a projection for the rest of the year, you would assume that he's going to surpass that $23.5 million. That's phenomenal for a dog that's... he was an outstanding race dog as well, and... to leave a legacy like that so young in his career. I'm just trying to think how old he is.
Yeah, is he the most... two questions, probably you might not have an answer, but they're ones for listeners to... A, is that the most expensive service fee ever for a greyhound in this part of the world? And B, is he already the greatest stud dog?
Well, he's definitely not the most expensive. Brett Lee got up around $10,000. And then, of course, when there's less and less straws and someone really... once one, you know, you can name your price. But I think, Matt, it's really hard. Yes, he's very, very successful. But I think when you look back to other dogs in the past, and I think the people from the 1950s and 60s will argue that their dog was, there was a dog in that time that was the most successful. So I think it's really hard to compare eras, but definitely in this era that I've been involved, for sure.
He's a lovely little dog to have out in the backyard or sleeping on the couch, Fernando Bale. There's no doubt about that. Hey, we're going to take a break on cracking the coats on
toads.
cracking the toads. Oh, they used to do that in Queensland with golf clubs. It wasn't very good for animal welfare. We're going to take a break.
We won't be doing that on the golf trip, by the way.
It is Newmarket. I don't think they're up there at Echuca. Newmarket Day. It's Australian Cup Day. It's Miracle Mile Night. And... what was the other big race today? Randwick Guineas and Horsham Cup. Hey, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have a chat to James Rattray, whose great horse Bowtide was one of the great legends, horse or human, spawned in that little country town in Tasmania called Longford.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the codes.
Smoking up first to see the judge, 28-6 the split, but he's been joined and headed by Chris and Me, and the NZ Superstar went to the lead. Here's the Tassie Terminator up on the inside. Bowtide giving chase. I'm Victorious runs on and for a reason's in a clear space, but Bowtide has hit the lead. He's dashed away. A most famous victory. Bowtide. Bowtide in 150-2 has gone home to beat Chris and Me, for a reason. I'm Victorious. Smoking up. It wasn't to be tonight. And then came Restrepo Mac Beauty. And further back in the race to finish last in was Terra de la...
Smoking Up was going for his third Miracle Mile. Chris and me ended up winning it the next year. But what a heart this... well, he must have been the pride of Tassie Bowtie had to win that Miracle Mile in 2013. And his trainer and driver joins us this morning, James Rattray. And I'm sure that must have just put a nice little smile on your face listening to that replay of your champion winning in 2013. James, welcome to Cracking the Codes.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
The Tassie Terminator, that's a nice little nickname that was given to him by the race caller there. He was a Terminator, wasn't he? There was that period with those Miracle Miles where he was as untouchable as a champion had been for the last 15 or 20 years. He was just top of the pops, Bowtie, for quite some time, wasn't he?
Somebody actually, a mate of mine, sent me the replay this morning and it still gives you goosebumps. Two or three seasons there, he was racing at the top level and, yeah, just gave us all a huge thrill.
James, at that time, I think the Miracle Mile was the first of his big wins because the two Inter-Dominions, he won two Inter-Dominions. Isn't that amazing to think? So the Miracle Mile came before those, but he was he got to the stage he was virtually invincible at Menangle.
Yeah, he loved the big track and he just got used to racing there. It took a while. He was racing good when he first came up, but he just got stronger and faster as he kept racing there. For a few seasons there, he was right at the top.
James, what sort of travelling was involved, given that you're in Tasmania and all these races seem to be interstate? Did it take a toll on you or the horse?
Well, we first sent him up for a few Metropolitan maiden races and I was sort of flying back and forth and he stayed up here for a little bit. And then after a while, ended up moving up because of him, really, and ended up getting a little stable together.
And stayed ever since.
Yeah, and set up here now in the Southern Highlands and got my own team and pretty well set up here now.
Tell us about Longford. I went to meet Mick Burles a few years ago and we were talking about the cleaner and then we rattled off and I Googled this incredible list of famous horses, humans. There was the Flanagan brothers, the authors. I think Michael Roach was either born there or played there and Bowtie, the cleaner. An incredible list of superstar horses and equines. What is it about Longford that creates all these megastars?
Yeah, it's a great little town. The family grew up playing footy there and were big into the footy and they had the local racetrack there. They race once a year and a lot of trainers are trained on that track. And yeah, it's just a great atmosphere, great little town and great people.
And the Rattray name is probably the most famous name in racing in Tasmania. And the state itself, family-wise, and then the state, must have been so proud of a Tasmanian hitting the spotlight in that way with you and Bowtie. Because I remember growing up and all the references that would be made to a great Tasmanian horse were often to either Piping Lane or Hellwes, which were about the same time. And then you had that period where horses like an El Meter Boy was going to the Vin Knight stable back in the late 1980s, James. And then for you to go and just shake the life out of the harness racing world, you must be considered one of the all-time greats in Tasmania there. They must have felt like they were put back on the map again.
Yeah, it was a great time. Bo, when he went to the Newcastle Mile and managed to win that and get his invite for the Miracle Mile, I think everyone half the state planned to come up and watch him, and all my mates and the whole family was up to watch that Miracle Mile, and everyone back home was watching, and it was just a great time.
Mongolian Khan's another one. He was sort of bred off the side of a mountain there in Longford. Just what's the backstory? Bowtie, the breeding and the first time you set eyes on him? Where did the story start, James?
Their dad had Bo's grandmother. So he's had the family for a long time and a lot of breeding. I think she had something like 14 individual winners herself and bred Gorsebush, who went on to breed Beau, and I think Gorsebush ended up having 10 winners herself, and just a great family and a couple of real good horses, and including him.
Did he sneak up on you a bit, or did he just hit the ground running? When was the first time you realised that you had a champion on your hands?
I was in America when he first started racing. My brother Gareth was driving and Dad was trained, and he sort of showed a lot of potential, but sort of up and down a little bit as his 2 and 3 year old. But it wasn't, he didn't really get going till sort of 4 and 5 when he started to mature. And he was sort of at his best at 6, 7 and 8.
You've got a chance to add another Miracle Mile success, and again, it's family involvement with your brother Todd and a horse called Ignatius, who, in a sense, has flown under the radar for this year's Miracle Mile, James. One thing you've got is a really good barrier draw. Can you upset King of Swing?
Yeah, well, we've finally got a barrier draw. He seems really sharp. He's come through the run as good as you could ask. Couldn't be happier with him. And he's sort of heading into retention today. And, yeah, just seems a treat. He's got a good draw, and we'll make the most of that and see what we can do.
James, is it hard to focus just on Ignatius tonight when you've got Bowtied in the back of your mind and his Miracle Mile win? Do you make comparisons about where the horses are or where they've been in their preparation and how they're feeling and looking going into tonight?
Yeah, you sort of, because you're getting them ready to go in and getting them ready for the race. You worry about them a lot, but he seems fine, so you sort of relax a bit. And he couldn't be any better, I don't think, leading into it. And Bo was the same. Like he's just sort of coming into his own then, and he went in looking a treat, and yeah. As long as you're happy with the horse, you know, you sort of relax a little bit.
Well, it's great to have the representation from Tassie again, and yourself, James. And we could just feel through the course of that interview, just mentioning the name Bowtied, and although we can't see you, but it just looked like your eyes lit up and you were smiling. And yeah, it must be amazing to have an association with such a great horse.
Is he still around, James? Bo?
Yeah, he's still here. He's up in the middle of our main track. You get to see him every day. He's sort of, he's great to have around with the young horses. He sort of straightens them out when we need him. So yeah, he's just good company, and good to see him every day too.
This will sound like the dumbest question ever, and it probably is. When a pacer frolics in a paddock, do they canter around or do they pace around?
They generally canter around.
Right, so it was a dumb question, wasn't it?
I didn't know the answer to that.
So no, because I thought, do they naturally revert? But you need to hobble them to do it, I suppose. But I was thinking maybe they just pace around because they're pacers. I don't know. Anyway, good to know that you see him every day, because what a legend he was, and it's so important to your stable, and he's got pride of place by the sound of it. Best of luck tonight with Ignatius.
Thanks very much.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the codes.
Racing. Slater last to begin. Trainer Journey began like a rocket on the inside. Gay with him initially. Level 5. Slater very wide out, and they're followed by Winsome History. They're followed by Seth, and further off would have been Cromlebale, Franklin Shadow. See you later. Off the back and level 5 in front of Winsome History. Trainer Journey. Slater got checked back to last. They turn level 5 and Winsome History. Winsome History went by level 5. Then Trainer Journey. Cromlebale late, but Winsome History in front. And Winsome History's won the cup.
That was the 2007 Horsham Cup, and of course it's Horsham Cup night tonight. And joining us to talk all things Horsham is club manager Justin Brilliant. Good morning, Justin.
Morning, Sloane. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Look, the guys have a chuckle every time we say your surname. They love the name Brilliant. I'm sure that they would love to change their surname to Brilliant.
or a variation. He could be Dan Excellent.
Oh, well, we could have that too. Matt Sensational.
Matt Magnificent. Hey, is the Horsham Cup going to be brilliant tonight or magnificent, Justin?
Probably better than brilliant, I'd reckon.
Well, it's a cup, Justin, that's eluded the locals, hasn't it? 1984 was taken out by Propellant, trained by local Jenny Cousley. But since then, it's failed to stay in the hometown.
Yeah, look, the locals sort of don't get much of a look in now. The big money on offer attracts the best dogs, and we tend to get a lot of the good dogs to get run out of the Australian Cup heat.
Justin, last week everything seemed to go pear-shaped this week, didn't it, for you?
Last year, Dan, last year.
You're not being Dan Magnificent now, are you? The last week leading up to the Horsham Cup. But 12 months on, they're still... how close to normal is it?
Oh, look, we've sort of had the plans for the last couple of months, and obviously the public events framework and COVID safe events, we were sort of stuck. So the government's announcements last Friday sort of came a bit too late for us. So we've got to probably be about a third of the crowd we normally would have, but at least we've got some people here rather than last year.
Just remind us about last year, because it all blew up and it was a doggy, flu, COVID-y, whatever the thing was, it sort of ravaged the field and affected all sorts of things. What happened last year? Because it coincided with what else was going on in society, but it was a completely different thing.
Yeah, they had an outbreak of canine coronavirus, which is a gastro-type bug, and knocks the dogs around a fair bit. And unfortunately... one of the dogs that competed here during our heat later returned a positive and had spread it to several of the kennels. And once it's in one kennel, they have to go into lockdown for 14 days. So I think had we tried to race on the actual Saturday of our cup, we would have only had about three dogs left in our cup field, given that there was three or four trainers went into lockdown for 14 days. So the decision was made to postpone for a couple of weeks, and then the human corona lockdown started, and we didn't have crowds or weren't able to shake hands with the winners and those sorts of things. So the world changed very quickly.
How common, I know that was sort of explained and clarified and all that sort of stuff, that it was a by name coronavirus only, but a completely different thing, and it affected the greyhounds in a different way. But how rare is it? I mean, it prompted a lockdown, and we associate lockdowns with the human COVID. How rare is this kennel cough COVID that these greyhounds... that caused such an effect last year?
Not so rare. They get little outbreaks every year, but generally people get on top of it pretty quickly. And it's so virulent, once it's in a kennel situation, can be passed in the air and feces in the emptying yards and those sort of things. But yeah, you need to go into sort of a 14 days to make sure everyone's clear. And that was sort of the thing, one turned up here with possibly symptoms or carrying it and passed the long, and a couple of positives came back, so a couple of key trainers went into lockdown for a period.
Well, fast forward to 2021, Justin, and you must be wrapped with the field that's heading there tonight. Gee, you've got Shimmershine, yet to win a country cup, but a dual group one winner, so it could be his night tonight and break the track record in the heats last week. So you must be absolutely wrapped, given the field that we've got assembled.
Oh, absolutely, and not just with Shimmershine. Like, Aston Cade was in the Australian Cup final last year. You got some great up-and-comers like Mr. America for Jason Thompson. Jack Spar won the Cranbourne Cup recently. So, yeah, it's a really strong field and a deep field, I think.
And given the change with the crowd, that it is a ticketed event, and in previous years, the fishing competition, all the campers are along the banks of the river there, aren't they, at Horsham, and they always would come across. It would be a huge night. I remember the nights of maybe 1,500 people there at the Greyhound. So it will look a little bit different tonight, but just the fact that we can move forward with it and you've got an event happening, it's some sort of a relief, really.
Where was the fishing competition, Justin? In the Green Lake, was it?
No, in the Wimmera River, which is we're right on the river here with our track. So we have a couple hundred campers right at our doorstep, but it's over.
What was the record catch? And if it was a carp, did it count?
No, they do have carp bags in the past. This year's a bit different because of COVID. They've got to just take a photo of the fish they catch on a brag mat, and it's random links of fish. But the winning fish last year, I think, was about a 2.6 kilo yellow belly.
Wow.
And they get a carp on that, so, yeah.
Excellent. I'm not into my fishing, so is that a big fish?
Oh, it's huge.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah. Huge.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, you'd almost build a statue as you drive into town. That's how big that was. Hey, Justin, good on you, mate, and good luck tonight.
Yep.
Got a tip for us?
Look, in the cup, it's almost impossible to go past Shimmer Shine. I think if he gets clear run out wide, he's probably going to break his own track record again. Given the track was harrowed a couple of weeks ago and it's firming up nicely. And the Sylvia Penny Memorial's attracted probably one of the best sprint fields you could hope to achieve in country Victoria, I think.
All right. Well, Shimmer Shine, what a name to have on an honour roll, on any honour roll. What a champion. Hey, good on you, mate. You've been brilliant as always.
All right. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Dan. And bye.
Thanks, Justin. I'll see you there tonight. And I do want to add, boys, that Justin's father, Ian, is a big fan of our show and listens to it every Saturday morning. So good morning, Ian. Hopefully I'll see you there tonight. I am heading down, boys. I am emceeing the event. So last year, of course, my services were not required because it was a bit of a non-event. But this year I am back there. So looking forward to it.
And she's in good form. She's in good form too at the moment with her emceeing.
I've had a few runs leading into it, haven't I?
Yeah, you've been run ragged. And then we've got our little Euroa thing, Echuca thing as well. So thank you to Justin Brilliant there. He is brilliant. So he's well-named. And guys, it's been another great show. That Burnborough package was so lovely, Dan. It was lovely to kick back and have a listen to that. And actually gave us a good chance for toilet break as well. So that was great. And I'm looking forward to today. And Simone, what have you got on today? More ponies?
Yeah, oh, and then heading to Horsham.
Heading to Horsham?
Yeah, so busy.
And we'll be 10 till 12 it, Dan?
We'll be at Flemington. We'll be at the site of our next group of champions, Australian Cup Newmarket Handicap. And as you said, guys, what a wonderful day in all three codes. It's a terrific time of the year.
And I'm looking forward to the Miracle Mile tonight, and I'm going to back the Rattray Runner now.
I think I am too.
Yeah, I think you are too, yeah. Simone.
I'm sort of warming that corner as well, absolutely.
He can convince me. So
Craig's winding
all.
Us up. He's come back. He's been away for 6 weeks and he's already giving me rude hand gestures. So we better go and we'll touch base again next Saturday.
See you then.
See you guys.